Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
It is confirmed, my friends. Actor, director, author, comedian, musician, and atheist Hugh Laurie, probably best known for his starring role in the TV show House, Hugh Laurie is the keynote speaker at this year's American Atheist National Convention. It's huge. And the best part is, he's speaking on Easter Sunday, which is also April Fool's Day, April 1st. The whole convention kicks off on March the 29th in Oklahoma City in the Bible Belt at the Sheraton Downtown Hotel. They've also lined up some other great names. Brooke Binkowski, she's the managing editor at Snopes.com, right? We use Snopes all the time. She's going to be there. Yvette D'Entremont, the Psy Babe, is going to be giving a presentation. I'm going to be hosting the Thinking Atheist podcast. We're going to do a show right there at the convention. A whole weekend of great speakers and connection and fun. And on top of all that, they've teamed up with the Oklahoma City Food Bank for a special charity thing. They're going to pack 25,000 meals to help feed hungry people. And the Oklahoma City Food Bank usually partners with, you know, religious organizations, churches and whatnot. So this is going to be something unique for them. And it's going to be a fantastic demonstration of good for goodness sake. It's a whole weekend about community, about charity and hearts. And I cannot wait. They've got the ticket prices on the website, general admission, member admission, student admission, military. And they're also doing something just for those on a limited or fixed income who can't afford the full convention admission. They have a discount admission price to make sure that they can attend. Anyway, convention tickets and hotel rooms are going fast, so get yours today. You can go to atheists.org/convention2018. That's atheists.org/convention2018. Now, on the podcast, coming up next week, I'm going to have a conversation with a guy named Dr. Hector Garcia. He has a book called Alpha God, The Psychology of Religious Violence and Oppression. And we're going to get into some, I don't know, I guess it's controversial, conversations about who's responsible for all this God stuff. Why do so many of these gods, especially the Abrahamic gods, have the whole alpha male going on? Why do they so often demonstrate male tendencies? What's that about? What's the psychology behind the creation of these gods? It's going to be a fascinating conversation. I'm sure you're going to want to weigh in as well. That's coming up next week. And then in 2 weeks, I'm going to have a panel of people, a panel including Matt Dillahunty, Sarah Hayter, Anthony Magnabosco, and someone he brought to the table, Kevin Sinopathy, to talk about tactics. How do we change minds out there? So often we speak to the religious, we hit a freaking wall. We get frustrated, we feel like we're making no headway, we're wasting our time. How do we make an inroad whenever it seems like that it's just impossible to get through to them? What tactics can and should we be using out there? And this isn't going to be a cookie cutter thing where one size fits all. It's going to be a conversation among people who do this and do it a lot, who have these conversations and have them a lot with believers to talk about what's working, right? If the point is for us to go out and try to change minds, change lives, improve the world, defeat superstition, well, let's talk about tactics. That's coming up in 2 weeks, so do not miss that. Today's show is a conversation between myself and a former naturopathic doctor. Her name is Britt Hermes, and she's currently facing a lawsuit for criticizing a naturopathic doctor. This was something I really wanted to talk about. Now, there's video of this interview, the video link, the YouTube link's in the description box, so I hope you enjoy. When I was in radio, I remember we had an advertiser who called himself a doctor of naturopathy, and we went out and did some live broadcast at his establishment, a natural health, I think he called it a clinic. And during the live broadcast, he had a white coat, like a physician, and he had glasses, which may or may not have been prescription. I don't know. And all around the place, I mean, it was just, ear candles and shark cartilage and all kind of herbs. And this guy called himself a doctor, but he had no medical license, no qualifications. He was just a businessman. Is that how naturopathy works, or is it something else, something more? I'm going to talk to a former naturopath right here. Her name is Britt Hermes. You were the person who was, walking around as an expert, someone who was going to help people get in touch with natural remedies for the things that ailed them.
I definitely held myself out as a health expert, a natural medicine expert, an expert in all things alternative to medicine. I wore a white coat. I had my name embroidered on it. I wore a stethoscope around my neck. I was in it fully.
You had a stethoscope. So did you actually use it, or was it just a prop?
It's so funny. I actually used it. I still have it on my coffee table over here, actually. Yeah. It's my
Let me listen to your heart, right? Let me check you out.
It's my one piece of my so-called doctor days that I haven't been able to get rid of. I loved that prop, the stethoscope.
How does this start, right? Were you just wanting to, were you suspicious of the pharmaceutical industry, the big bucks, the big corporations, that kind of thing?
Totally. I don't know that I bought into a lot of the conspiracy theories that seem to be circulating within the alternative medicine movement today. But I certainly did not like medical doctors. I didn't think I had a need to ever see a medical doctor. I had an experience with a dermatologist when I was 16 that really left a bad taste in my mouth. He was a total jerk. I remember trying to engage him in conversations about why I had psoriasis and if perhaps there was anything other than steroid medications to treat the condition. He brushed me off and, left me feeling like medicine was this sort of revolving door system where you come in, you get a pill, and you leave. And so I had gone out searching for sympathy, really, and had made up my mind at the age of 16 that I would really never see a medical doctor again, that everything could be handled, within an alternative medicine context.
Britt, by the way, is going to be speaking in just a few minutes about a lawsuit against her. I don't know how much you can or cannot say, but now that you're on the other side of the looking glass, and I don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves, but you are calling out the bullshit and you are being targeted in very specific ways for doing so. But at the time, you were all in. Give me some specifics of the types of things you might prescribe and for what.
I have definitely recommended homeopathy to patients. I initially started out in a family medicine style practice where I was seeing patients of all ages, so kids and grandparents and everyone in between. So I saw a lot of children with ear aches or ear infections, and I recommended different herbal elixirs for this. Some of these herbal mixtures, the kid would take orally, like an oral supplement to, air quote, boost the immune system, which isn't an actual thing that you really want to happen. You don't want to boost the immune system, and there aren't herbs that do boost it. But some of these herbal elixirs were also dropped directly into the ear with the idea that they had, sort of on-target antiviral or antibacterial properties. I saw lots of digestive and stomach conditions for which I would frequently recommend specific diets. I would recommend dubious testing methods to look for food intolerances. I had a whole host of supplements for digestive complaints that, of course, consisted of probiotics, which are sort of the supplement du jour, but also other supplements that were intended to do anything, like heal the gut mucosa. And we would always describe it in these broad terms because, of course, there wasn't really any mechanism of action that could be explained. So you would use these broad sweeping terms like reduce inflammation or heal the mucosa. And I sold a lot of this for virtually any condition under the sun that you can think of, actually.
Gut mucosa is actually a great, like, indie band name, isn't it? Like, tonight in concert, it's Gut Mucosa with,
A little gross.
I remember this guy that I referenced at the beginning of the show. I don't know why these things stick in your head. It's funny, the anecdotes that come to mind. But somebody, I got the vibe, he had an answer for everybody who had some challenge to him. So somebody walks in, and I don't know, he'd been taking lawn clippings for whatever. They prescribed him something in a bottle that looked impressive. And he came in and he said, I've been having gas, really bad gas, ever since I started taking this. You know, and I'm concerned. And he immediately, without skipping a beat, said, well, that's your body trying to expel the gas. You can see that the substance is working, trying to expel the gas from the body. And I had to stop and admire the guy because I thought, I mean, he spun that bullshit out in a hurry. Did you do any of this, or were you conscious of doing any of this kind of thing?
I wasn't conscious of it, but we're certainly taught to have answers for which the medical system doesn't seem to have answers for. So when a patient comes in with unexplained fatigue or symptoms that have been perhaps perplexing the medical community for some time, and these are often, you know, it's not just a list of symptoms. Oftentimes this is sort of a very comprehensive patient story that you're teasing apart. The shtick of the naturopath, and really the role of the naturopath that we're taught to step into, is to provide an answer for these unexplainable situations and to be the supportive healthcare person for the patient who feels lost or left behind by conventional medicine. So I really did develop similar, you know, sales pitches, I guess you could call it, spins about how to sell whatever it was that I was selling, whether that was a supplement or me personally, you know, my personal services. I didn't recognize it at the time as that, but in hindsight, that's absolutely what it was.
You saw yourself as kind of an ambassador then, you know, look, we're going to stick it to the man kind of thing, right? I mean, we're going to stick it to the establishment, the big money, the deep pockets, the corporate interests, and we're going to be about people. That's the narrative that you sold yourself, yeah?
Right, right. But of course, with love and while wearing hemp.
Talk to me about ear candles, right? My stepdaughter, she's precious. She comes home, I don't know how many months ago. And of course, it took us about 10 seconds to debunk it. But somebody gives her ear candles, right? She comes home and she's like, this is crazy. And so we all did it, right? I participated in the experiment and, you know, I'm doing it with a wink, knowing that we're going to get into what's happening. But the idea was, is that, you know, you cock your head over and you stick the candle in your ear and you light the end of it and it's supposed to suck the toxins out. Well, what are we talking about here?
Yeah, that's the best explanation that I could give. I think that somehow the contact with the ear and the heat would draw out the infection. And what's so funny is that I never used ear candles to remove earwax, but I used something called the hot onion technique, where it's just as nonsensical, where you slice a whole onion in half, like a white onion, and you heat it up. So you can heat it up in the microwave for, you know, like 10 seconds or something. You want to get it nice and steamy and hot so you can really smell those onion sulfury compounds. And with a towel, you hold it against an ear that has an ear infection. So this is usually like a toddler. And the idea was that the aromatic medicinal compounds from the onion could somehow permeate through the layers of the ear and have an antiviral or antibacterial effect, depending on what you thought it was, while drawing out the, you know, the infection and the pus. So it's the same sort of crazy idea that you sort of find yourself sometimes embarrassed while explaining.
You got to forgive the look on my face, right? I mean, you walk in, someone's holding the hot onion up to the baby's head. I got nothing.
Well, imagine being a parent and paying, you know, $150 out of pocket for a naturopath for an alternative treatment for your kid's ear infection, and then going home, right, and slicing an onion in half. To your kid's ear.
Britt, did you go to what is there a school? How do you come by the label of doctor in the naturopathic sense? Did you qualify in some way?
Well, I cheated the system. And by cheating the system, I mean I went to naturopathic school. So there are these 4-year postgraduate colleges that are accredited by a naturopathic education council, which that accreditation allows students in the program to borrow federal student loan money, which is necessary because the program costs about $40,000 per year, and it's a 4-year program. So I spent well over $200,000 going to naturopathic school. After I graduated, I took a licensing exam, which many, many naturopaths mischaracterize as a board certification exam. It's not a board certification exam. It's a naturopathic licensing exam. And depending on what state I'm in, that licensing exam then allows me to legally call myself a doctor or even a physician. Or in Arizona, I was legally allowed to call myself a naturopathic medical doctor and use the title NMD. So it's very confusing to patients in this state in particular, because it just looks like I'm a medical doctor who happened to study a little bit of natural medicine on top of that.
$200,000. That causes me physical pain, Britt.
Yeah,
How much does it cost to get a regular, like a, you know, I mean, like a family practice, like to become a physician? I mean, we're in the same ballpark, right?
It costs about that. Oh, yeah. So what's interesting about the naturopathic schooling system in North America is that it's set up to appear to be like naturopathic, or excuse me, like medical school superficially. You know, so they've adopted these markers of legitimacy, whether it's the fact that each program is 4 years or, you know, each year of the program cost. Similarly, there's a licensing exam in naturopathy now, which is modeled, to look like a real medical licensing exam. But of course, you're being tested on nonsense instead of medicine. So, it looks like the naturopathic education is something real, is something legitimate, because when you're someone like me who doesn't really know much and is admittedly naive and already had preconceived notions about conventional medicine being bad and anything natural being good, I looked for these superficial markers to sort of convince myself that naturopathy was a real thing.
I have to talk about the money quickly. One of the angles is that, you know, big pharmacy is big business. You know, it's in their best interest to keep you sick, to treat the symptoms, to keep you on the chain. But we, as naturopaths, we're here for you. We're not in it for the money. And yet, naturopathy, homeopathy, bullshittery, these things are, well, they're pretty big money enterprises, correct?
Right, they are. It costs a lot of money to pursue alternatives to medicine. And the reality is that the people, you know, the patient base for alternative medicine alternative medicine practitioners, the patient base are upper middle class to wealthy individuals. You know, they're people who can afford for something to go wrong, in other words.
And here you are on the other side of the looking glass, not just a critic of naturopathy, but looking at a lawsuit with your name on it. How did this happen? How did you get here?
I wrote a blog post on my blog, naturopathicdiaries.com, where I speak out against the naturopathic profession and many naturopathic treatments.
Yeah, if I may stop you right there, though, Britt. I mean, yeah. how did you get to the point of speaking out against? You were a proponent of.
Well, so that goes all the way back to 2014. and leaving, you know, making the decision to retire from naturopathy and to walk away from my career as a naturopath and the $200,000 plus that I spent on my schooling. That was a really emotional, really gnarly experience.
But it was your career at the time? Were you full-time?
I was full-time.
Is it naturopath? Naturopath, yeah.
Yeah, either way is fine. But yeah, I was full-time naturopath in Tucson, Arizona.
So you're almost, it's like you're pot committed for so long, right? I've got this much money, this much time, this much energy. I'm all in, and now I'm just going to walk away from the table.
Right. So I was working in a clinic. We called it a clinic in Tucson, Arizona. And my boss at the time, who still owns the clinic, he treats cancer patients. He was treating cancer patients then, and he treats cancer patients now as a naturopath. And he offers alternative cancer treatments. Well, in 2014, he was importing and administering a drug named Ukraine, like the country, but with no E. And he was giving this drug intravenously to many different patients with all sorts of different types of cancer. So some with breast cancer, throat cancer, GI cancers, and of all different stages. And the patients were under the impression that this was sort of a cure-all cancer drug. So you could have all of these different types of cancers and use the same drug at the same dosing schedule. And under his orders, I was helping him administer this drug. So I was actually, you know, pushing the syringe of this drug into his patients. And the patients were paying for this medication up front, and it was being shipped from Austria, so imported from overseas. And one day the package didn't arrive. Well, this was very concerning to patients because they had already paid for their dose of medication. Plus, they were on a schedule for the medication. So they were told that they needed to receive so many treatments within a week for so many weeks in order for the treatment to have an effect. And it's an expensive drug. They were paying thousands of dollars for it. So the package didn't arrive. Patients expressed to me that they're concerned. I relay this concern onto my boss, who says something like, you know, don't worry about it. The package was probably confiscated by the FDA. Well, that wasn't the answer that I was expecting to hear. And I thought that was odd. So I went home and basically just started Googling information about the drug Ukraine. I learned that it was not approved in the US to treat cancer or any other drug or any other condition. Not only was it not approved in the US, but it had also been denied approval as a drug in virtually any other westernized country. So not in the UK, not in Canada, you know, not in Europe. And what this meant was to import and to administer, you know, a non-FDA approved drug like this is a federal crime. So that pretty much terrified me because, as I said, I was assisting in delivering this drug to patients.
It's like you're a potential accomplice. Were you having those discussions? I'm going to end up in jail or something.
Yeah, it was unbelievably terrifying. It was a Friday. I remember it so clearly. It was Mother's Day weekend. It was a Friday. And Monday morning, I didn't even call the lawyer. I showed up at a lawyer's office and walked straight up to the front desk Monday morning and asked to speak to the lawyer that I wanted, that I thought should represent me. And of course, the lawyer didn't have any availability. You know, he's busy. And I'm just walking in off the street, you know, in tears. And I said, that's okay, I'll wait. I'm going to sit in the waiting room until he has 15 minutes for me, because I had so much anxiety. I felt so sick about it that there was nothing else I could do until I had secured legal representation and had assistance navigating this difficult situation.
So the house of cards tumbling all around, your doubts increasing, and then what?
Well, so it was clear to me that I would be leaving my practice, but my lawyer gave me some very good, you know, guidance and counseling around this. He helped me file a complaint with the Arizona Naturopathic Board, which I wanted to do and was happy to do and would have done regardless. He also encouraged me to file a report with the Attorney General. So I did that. I was happy to do the right thing there as well. Of course, I left my practice and now I'm suddenly unemployed and in a unique position where I'm far more open-minded about what the critics of naturopathy are saying than I've ever been before.
And you have become a critic, a harsh critic,
a very harsh
and stern critic,
critic
of naturopathy. Okay, let's talk specifically about the lawsuit in as much detail rather as you can give me here.
Sure. So I wrote a blog post in December 2016 about a naturopath named Colleen Huber who treats cancer patients. She uses therapies like intravenous baking soda and intravenous vitamin C. And she encourages that her patients to follow a strict sugar-free diet. So by sugar-free, I mean not just no processed sugars, but also no honey, basically nothing sweetened, no fruit juice. I think the only acceptable sweetener in her mind is stevia. Huber also recommends that patients use her alternative cancer treatments before starting any conventional medical treatment. She's characterized chemotherapy and radiation as being therapies that strengthen cancer and weaken the patient. And I also criticized her so-called cancer research. So she's conducted some research in her practice on her patients, studying the effects of her sugar-free diet in conjunction with other naturopathic therapies like the IV baking soda for her cancer patients. And she has reported on her website and in other places online some pretty remarkable results. So she claims, for example, that
it's not exactly a double-blind study we're talking about here, right?
No. So the study's not, she characterizes it as a retrospective like case study of about 300 patients. And so she makes claims on her website or has at one point made claims on her website that say things like 80% of patients who complete our treatments alone go into remission. 93% of patients in stage one through early stage four, that's of all cancers, who do all of our protocols have gone into remission. And so all of our protocols meaning, you know, follow our special cancer diet and do our alternative therapies. So I criticized these remarkable claims and I looked at her study because I think claims like, you know, we can cure about 90% of all cancer is a pretty remarkable statement that deserves scrutiny. Huber was or is offended by these statements, by these opinions. And instead of engaging me in a scientific discussion about the quality and the methodology of her research, and instead of addressing some of the concerns I had about her research and what I consider to be dubious cancer treatments, she decided to sue me for defamation in Germany, where I live. So she's an American naturopath in Arizona, but she's suing me for defamation in Germany.
Now, how is that done exactly? How does she cross the lines of different nations legally?
That I'm finding out. So because I live here in Germany in Kiel, it seems to be allowed. Otherwise, I think it would be considered libel tourism. Although in my opinion, this still certainly feels like libel tourism because the free speech laws in Germany are more plaintiff friendly compared to the United States.
I would think the, you know, this standoff, a debate. I mean, I'd love to see Dr. Huber on stage against, you know, with you there and maybe Dr. Steve Novella and, you know, Dr. Sure. Harriet Hall and some of the folks at Science Based Sure. Medicine. And let's just, hey, let's just talk. Let's just lay out our case. That sounds like something that, you know, most reasonable people would welcome.
Well, there's an opportunity to do that. People comment on my blogs. Her research is published in what looks like predatory journals. It doesn't look like any of her so-called research papers went through peer review. But there was an opportunity for her to certainly comment on my blog post or perhaps to point me to more information that she may have wanted me to have. But as I said, instead of engaging me in a conversation, she just decided to sue me.
Yeah, I mean, write a refutation point by point. This is what she gets wrong. Brad is wrong about this, and here's my source, and here's the peer-reviewed data to back it up. I mean, and we see it done all the time. So where are you at personally right now? Are you playing a waiting game? I mean, paint a picture.
Well, okay. So the picture is this. I found out I was getting sued the same week that I found out I was pregnant. So it's been emotionally trying and exhausting. I'm in a full-time PhD program here in Kiel. So I'm trying to keep up with life, get through never-ending morning sickness and also deal with the intensity of the lawsuit, which is very time-consuming, as anyone can imagine.
Forgive me for interrupting. Do you think she's hoping she'll scare you off? She's hoping you'll just go away?
Yeah, I have the impression, you know, I think I'm viewed as an easy target. I've been very open about the fact that I went to naturopathic school on student loans and that I have a ton of student loan debt. Everyone who looks at my website can basically find information that says I'm a PhD student and that my husband is also a PhD student. So I think I'm definitely viewed as an easy target. And I think, it really seems to me that I feel like I'm being legally bullied in this situation and that the hope was that I would just back out and cave to Huber's demands, which essentially consists of removing the blog post.
So that's the stipulation. You remove the post and we'll just say, hey, forgive and forget, or at least forget, right?
Well, at least forget. Yeah. So when you sue someone for defamation, you can claim, and I think you're supposed to claim damages, because one of the pieces of defamation is that not only is the accusation that I've intentionally lied, but that these intentional lies have directly hurt her business. But she's only claiming 500 euros in damages. It seems to me that the real objective is to make me financially hurt by having to legally defend myself and to get the blog post that she finds offensive removed.
So a whole lot of skeptics have rallied around you at this time. And how can we help? How can we continue to help? Is probably the let me say it again because I just choked all over my coffee. So a lot of skeptics at this measure have sort of rallied around you. You know, we got your back. How can we help? How have people been helping? Where do we go? What do we do?
Yeah, the science and skeptic community has been absolutely incredible about standing with me during this really difficult time. So the Australian Skeptics organized a international fundraising campaign for my legal defense. And they did so with collaborators from all over the world. And we are asking for donations, which can be done at their website, which is skeptics.com.au/Brit Hermes. So ASI, Australian Skeptics, is independently collecting and holding these funds on my behalf. I don't see any of this money, and ASI doesn't see any of this money, and nor do any of the collaborators. So whatever is needed for my legal defense will be spent there first. But we're encouraging to skeptics and scientists and anyone else who wants to support me to donate, because any remaining funds will be either parlayed into a general skeptic defense fund, so that if other bloggers and writers find themselves in a position like mine, they can afford to defend themselves against acts of legal thuggery. Or the money will be donated to an international science charity called Sense About Science.
I like the idea of us sort of, you know, sticking together, and because it's right, because we're speaking out against woo and bad ideas and false claims, and at the very least unsustainable claims. I remember there was a guy who was a local guy. He was diagnosed with pretty intense cancer, and he had bought into, or had been sold and then bought into, the idea that he could beat it, not with chemo. Chemo was poison. He was going to go and drink juice and have coffee enemas, and he ended up in some third world country paying, I don't know how many tens upon tens of thousands of dollars, so that he could treat cancer with juice and coffee enemas and a very stringent sort of a procedure they had him go through. And meanwhile, he ends up on chemo anyway, you know, except he had lost months of his life while he was trying desperately, sort of grasping at straws at this quote unquote naturopathic alternative. And so we're not just fighting in regard to the specific lawsuit, but we want to be fighting bad ideas, right?
Exactly. We're fighting for true informed consent for patients, for patient protection, and for the right to continue to inform the public about therapies that could ultimately kill them.
So with the lawsuit, oh, I see your little puppy in the background.
Yeah.
What's your dog's name?
Buddha.
Little Buddha. It's all right. I've got my mascot right here, almost always in my lap as I conduct interviews, but he's 3.5 pounds, and so he stays out of sight most of the time. Wow. With the PhD program and the lawsuit, you still find time to blog? And what is the website where I can send people, okay?
Yeah, I'm finding time to blog still at my site, which is naturopathicdiaries.com. I'm getting stuff up a little more consistently now. I had a few rough weeks with my morning sickness, but I'm back at it.
Well, congratulations on the good news about the pregnancy. And
thank you.
We got your back on this lawsuit thing. I know that there are a great many people who are listening and watching who would be eager to stand at your side in this endeavor. We'll watch what happens. Let us know if there's anything else we can do. Britt Hermes, it's been a joy.
Thank you so much.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on the Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.